lights. Camera. Action. It's the KSL Movie Show.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The week's big movie review, movie news, games, and prizes. Here's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales.
We're slow learners. We're not particularly good listeners.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Yes, it is another episode of the movie show. A mere few hours after we completed
It's Friday again.
It's Friday. You have not lost a week's time since you heard us earlier today. It has been a few hours. But, Steve, it's our special annual Sundance edition of the movie show.
Yes, and the fact that it's at the Megaplex, it's about time. I mean, for years and years, they kind of like, I don't know. And now they're back. They were here last year, and we're back this year, and the crowd just came out of a movie. It's fantastic.
I just love that sound in the background, the bustle. This is what we've missed really since COVID, honestly, is the lobby full of people all excited and talking about something they've just seen. That's what movie-going experience is supposed to be like, that communal experience. Then you go talk about it afterwards.
Exactly.
And so that's
and that's what they're doing.
Yeah, there's pockets of people. More people keep streaming out. So the Megaplex theaters, this is something I learned tonight. I didn't know this. One of my questions was, so are some of them Sundance, some of them regular? The answer is it's all Sundance.
Yeah, Sundance has it for the whole 10 days.
But they'll book three theaters at a time for one movie, and then everyone will watch it at the same time. So you get to have an even bigger audience experience just in multiple auditoriums, which I think is clever.
Well, I think it'll depend on what movie it is. If it's one that everyone's expecting, you know, like 1, 2, and 3 theaters will be one film, and then 4 and 5 will be another movie, and then 6 will be, you know, maybe a smaller film.
Yeah, and we'll be talking with Larry Tassoni from Megaplex Theaters as well as others just throughout the show tonight. So what we want to do, let's do a quick, let's do the movie show preview. Well, normally we have some music there, but that's okay. It's Friday night. It doesn't matter. We're relaxed.
We're flying by the seat of our pants.
So, oh, it broke. Well, that's good to know. We have broken the movie show already, and we are just moments into it. But we're glad to have you here tonight. Steve, the things we're going to talk about tonight on the movie show, we're about to be joined by Rachel Wagner, a fellow member of the Utah Film Critics Association.
Love.
Because she's actually seen one of the movies.
Oh, I know.
We've only seen part of a documentary
series.
We've
been yakking all day.
Right? And so we wanted to make sure that in the movie show, we actually reviewed one of the Sundance movies,
yes.
And so we had to grab somebody who'd seen
it. Do we
it.
Trust Rachel, though?
I think we trust Rachel. Rachel, welcome to the show. And you were telling us beforehand, you just happened to be walking out, hey, Rachel, yeah, we were just with you at the Utah Film Critics Movie Awards from last year.
Which and I agreed then, with you a lot.
Yes, all right.
And when we said, oh, what were you just at?
I just got out of seeing Girl State, the documentary by Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss.
All right, well, we're going to have you review
these
it.
These are the same people that did Boy State, right?
Correct, okay. Yeah.
So you're going to have to, because here's the other thing we got to explain. So I'm more of a newbie on the Sundance side of things. Now, I did some interviews with the Fan Effect KSL podcast back in 2017 and some in 2018. It was a great experience. We were actually up in Park City. We had some people from Sundance, some people from Slam Dance. It was mixed. That was before I even knew what the real difference was. But since then, it's been a lot less of exposure. So I am, at least up until I was preparing for this movie show, I was a lot more unfamiliar with how this all works. How do the movies get in? How do people go see them? And then I found out it's very hard sometimes to get in to go see them. Not impossible, no. But that's why it's so great that now they're going to be shown, and I thought you could only see them up in Park City, although I've found out since that there are some different screenings
down Broadway, Rose Wagner. Yeah,
yeah. But now that I know these kinds of things, now I have to progress to the next level. But I feel like there's probably a lot of our listeners who are kind of like me. They know of Sundance. They know it's here. They know it's a big deal every year. But they probably know more about how to go try to find the stars up in Park City and what streets to try to hang out on and where do you park and is it too slippery and all that stuff than they do about the actual movies. So I want to kind of help bridge the gap between the super knowledgeable people like you and Rachel and them, the novices like me.
Okay.
So we're going to talk with a director of one of the documentaries that's in Sundance. We are going to do a movie. We might even do two movie show top tens. We're going to do the top 10 grossing Sundance films of all time, and then 10 of our favorite movies that have come out of Sundance that maybe didn't necessarily make that, you know, didn't make the top 10 grossing of all time. But three of my favorite movies from last year, I didn't know, came out of Sundance.
Yeah.
And of the whole year.
See, it's funny. Years ago, like, documentaries were never shown in theaters. So when I would go to Sundance, I would go to the docs because I knew that the premiere movies and some of the, you know, dramatic competition films would come out in theaters at some point. So I usually would avoid
those. That's a good strategy.
And I would go to the docs. But lately, the docs have been showing up in theaters. So I'm kind of drifting into the world dramatic competitions because some of those movies now are exceptional. But so I have a list of some docs that I would recommend, and, you know, we can just go from there.
Yeah, and I've got a list of ones just, and again, haven't seen them yet, but having read over the list of movies, there are some that I would like to see and that hopefully I'll get to see during Sundance so I don't have to wait until, like, September or October. Although, this year, we might see Sundance movies hitting theaters earlier than ever before because the writers and actors strike last year has cleared the slate from the beginning of the year, and there is a real thirst to get movies into theaters that are finished.
Well, here's the other thing. Also, a lot of these studios have been buying them in advance of Sundance. So we've already seen Netflix, Neon,
yes,
a bunch, a Searchlight, have all sort of, you know, put their hand on, this is ours, because they kind of want to avoid the bidding war that sometimes these films will create. So if they can buy them in advance, they can probably save themselves some money. And
well, now some of them already have premiere dates. Like, there's at least one of them I know is premiering this month on Netflix.
Yeah, and I know one that's like on the 9th on Hulu. So I'm like, so the turnaround's pretty quick.
It's also the 40th anniversary of Sundance, and so we want to kind of talk about that's part of the reason we're going to do some top 10s from over the history as opposed to maybe just the 10 that we're most looking forward to. Rachel, what were you going to say?
Well, it's always the battle with Sundance is, do you go to the premieres that you know you'll be able to see other times in the year that will get a release, or do you go to the more obscure stuff that there's still films that I've seen at Sundance that have never been released that I'm just so glad I took the opportunity to see it. Because that was the only time. But sometimes those can be really rough. They're not released for a reason. So you try to make it a balance of the premieres versus the...
Well, there's also the gamble. I mean, you have no idea. No one's seen these movies.
Yep.
So you go in and you're like, ugh, that was horrible.
Which is part of the fun of it. I mean, you get out of... I'll never forget seeing Sing Street, I mean, and just walking out. And being like, that was one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and once did that to me as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what are some of the movies that never made it to theaters. I guess I never thought about that. I sort of assumed that all these movies would play somewhere, someday, sometime.
Well, normally in a regular year, there'll be about 110 or so feature films. This year, there's only 82. And I don't know if that's partly because of the strike or what happened.
Some of the Sundance movies I was reading were actually completed during the strike. They got the waiver from the Actors Guild to continue work and finish it up so that they could have it ready for Sundance.
And the other thing was the submissions this year were greater than ever, but they've winnowed it down to a fewer films. So hopefully that means quality, quality, quality.
Yeah, it's like there was this movie called Butterflies, and I think it was 2018. It was a Turkish director. It's hilarious, and I loved it so much. It's never been released. I always look for it, like every couple of months. I'll be like, is it there?
There's another movie called Run, Ronnie, Run.
Is it on Tubi?
Yeah.
Run, Ronnie, Run. I was laughing hysterically, and I've never seen it outside of Sundance.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So, see, that's something that I didn't know. So there are some movies that you can't wait to see when they hit theaters later, because if you don't see it here, you never get to see it.
Well, that's the whole joy of independent filmmaking, is that, you know, you get some guy he's throwing money at something, and it might be garbage. But, you know, they usually pick, if you're going through...
If you make it into Sundance, you can't be total garbage.
No. But you think of 4,000...
Rachel's like,
4,400 entries this year for feature films, and they chose only 82. That's pretty remarkable.
I'll never forget the movie about a tree. It was a documentary, just literally following a tree for an hour and a half. was just like, what?
Was Yoko Ono the director?
Now, that's the kind of movie that, in my ignorance over the years, I thought Sundance was all about. Like,
The
movies that the real movie people.
Well, there's some of that.
People like me that like superhero movies and, we would never go to that. But, the thing with the tree is that it was such a metaphor. Like, that's how I perceived Sundance to be. Mm-hmm. How wrong am I?
Well, there's just 100 different topics that they can. There's going to be those little esoteric films that just like that river hasn't moved in 28 minutes.
Oh, geez. Yeah. It's performance art, you see.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Rachel, we want to get your review of Girl State, but we're going to have to do that after we take a break. So if you'll stick around, we'd love to hear what you thought of Girl State and maybe get somebody excited to go and see it and pick up some tickets.
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, we'd appreciate that. We'll do that on the movie show. We also want to give out our text question a chance for you to respond. 57500 is the number. Have you ever been to a Sundance film? And tell us which one and which were your favorites. So if you've actually been to a Sundance film playing during Sundance, we'd love to hear your experience. Text us that at 57500. Fair warning, the more condensed and brief and direct you can make it, the more likely that we'll read it. We probably don't have time to read like a novel. But
and by the way, we're doing telephone torture tonight.
We will have telephone torture.
And it will be my mom's favorite Sundance movie.
All right. So, Steve, what is your mom's number so people can... No, I'm just kidding.
She's passed away, so that's going to be tough.
Well, okay. Well, I just killed that really effectively. That's an even more poor choice of words. So let's bail out here while we still have the chance.
And she's number one in my heart.
Never ask a question you don't know the answer to.
Oh, that is so true, Larry Tassoni from Megaplex Theaters. Larry, we're excited to be here. What a great buzz in the lobby as people come out of these movies and just start talking with each other like we were saying just a little bit ago.
Well, yeah, we were talking about the smiles on people's faces as everyone was coming out. They finished that screening of Girl State, and there was a Q&A.
The director was even here, right?
With the director, so that's one of the awesome things that also comes with Sundance. So.
And so coming to Megaplex Theaters, it's only been a couple of years since you guys have been a Sundance official host again.
Yeah, this is year two for us. So, we learned a lot in year one, and I think the guests also learned a lot in year one, like our full concession stands up and running so you can have popcorn or other food with your movie that you don't necessarily get at some of the other Sundance venues.
So what are the three movies, or did you say three or four, that are playing here at the Gateway right now from Sundance?
Yeah, there's a few. There's one called Eno, I think is what it's called. Yeah. Obviously, Girl State. Ghostlight is another one. There's a couple other. I was looking through the schedule. One is something about how to have sex. You get a little bit of everything, the full spectrum of
different types of
when
entries.
You also have Lollapalooza playing.
Yeah, that was the other one, yes, correct.
And that's one we'll actually talk to the director of that coming up later in this hour. But for people who haven't been to the Gateway, I mean, there's a reason this one's called the Luxury Megaplex at the Gateway.
I mean, if you haven't been since we finished our remodel, we did it during COVID. And it was such a hit at the Sundance Festival last year that people could come and have the heated luxury recliners and Atmos sound and laser projectors. I mean, it was not only a hit from the attendees, but also the filmmakers themselves. We had shows that'll get added in throughout the festival. It's usually based on what seems to be like popular. And there were many filmmakers that were, we want another show added over at the Gateway. You know, I want to see it on those screens. And I
had a filmmaker come up to me and said, I've never seen my movie in this good of a presentation, ever.
That comment has been thrown around a lot in the last year as we've discussed the festival.
Well, and it's interesting. That goes along with the comment that Rachel was saying where they may not show anywhere else. And so when you're an independent filmmaker and you're just trying to show it in, like, libraries or movie nights at the bar and those kinds of things, I'm thinking specifically of the movie... The ski movie from a couple of weeks ago,
the same thing.
Where, you know, for her, she made the movie and she was hoping to show it to 30 people on amateur film night at the local pub in the ski town. And so to get it up on the full digital, because if it never makes it in wide distribution, this is the only time they get to have it in the premium theater with the luxury recliners and the Atmos surround sound and all that stuff. That would be an awesome experience.
And that's what the spirit of Sundance is, right? It's it's for these filmmakers to try and find distribution in some way, shape, or form to get their art out into the world. And so you got to take advantage of it because you may see something here that you'll never have a chance to see again.
Now, Larry, as we go throughout the show, we're going to talk about all the other cool things that Megaplex offers. But right now there's people that are driving to see movies, whether it's trying to come here to Gateway to see a Sundance movie, or they're just going, it's Friday night and tonight's the night you go see movies. They want to go see something that they've missed or that, heaven forbid, Night Swim. I don't recommend that one, but whatever. But tonight's the night to go and get some free popcorn.
Yeah, it's still National Popcorn Day for a few more hours, and you know, until our last show start up. So walk into any Megaplex and tell them it's National Popcorn Day, and either get a free small or a free refill on your Megatub.
Yeah, I think the Megatub seems like the best value, even though they're both free.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sure. You'll get a higher quantity. You know, you'll get an Andy size quantity of popcorn.
That's right. The Andy size free popcorn on National Popcorn Day. All right, Larry Tassone, Megaplex Theaters. We'll be talking more with you as we go along on the movie show.
It is Sundance.
That sounds like a Western. And Sundance feels like a Western type of sound, even though it's a ski resort. But it's named after Butch and Sundance, so I guess that fits. Well, it's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales, the movie show. We're live at the Megaplex Gateway Luxury Theaters downtown at the Gateway. And we're joined now by Rachel Wagner from rachelsreviews.net. Is that right? And she's a fellow member of the Utah Film Critics Association. And she's actually seen a movie. And, hey, we've already got a text from one of our listeners, Rachel. I've been listening to hear Girls State review. Now, I don't know if that's a relative or if that's just somebody super excited about Girls State, but we got to hear about it. So tell us, what is Girls State about? This is one of the Sundance ones that I saw on all the buzz lists from like Variety and Deadline Hollywood and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is one of the titles that they put on their buzz list.
Ah. Yeah, so this is a documentary. It follows up Boys State, which was also a documentary about the American Legion's Boys State program. This is the Girls State program where they have teenagers that gather together and put on a little government that they vote for, and they elect a Supreme Court, and they decide on things, and there's campaigning and all of that. And so the idea is to kind of see the difference between how the boys run their legion, their event, and the way the girls do, which was interesting.
In the boys one, did they look at the girls too, or did they just focus on the boys?
Nope.
Just on the boys, but this was the first time, I think, that the two were at the same time and at the same college.
Okay.
So I think that sort of necessitated the comparison, but also they were trying to make sort of a comparison that the girls' state is not as well-funded and supported. As the boys state, and I guess they are separate entities. They just happen
to be at the same place this year.
Yeah, because I guess the Boy Scouts of America, you know, it's like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts are totally different organizations, and I guess that's the case with this as well. And it was pretty good that they had one of the girls start sort of investigating this discrepancy, and I was more interested in the sort of the journey of this girl than I was about like an exposure of this kind of a thing, because there was a lot of information that we didn't get. Like, we don't know if there's just less girls interested. We don't know, you know, we just don't know the information about just to say, oh well, less money is spent on one versus the other, you know. But I was interested in this girl as she's investigating it. That was interesting to me.
So is this told in like a sit down with interviews with them, or is it told as like a narrator as you follow footage from the thing? How is it
presented? With interviews and then clips from the different rallies and assemblies and things like that.
One thing I noticed in Boys State, they were vicious, and they used like horrible political tricks on each other. Were the girls this nasty?
No, they were a lot nicer, but it's still calculated. Which was interesting. And the way that they used feminism and the way they used sort of political dogma that was
against each other?
Not against each other, but just to score points and to get votes, you know, saying that they would invoke feminist rhetoric.
Where do they learn these things? Are they taught by their parents before they go? Is there strategy sessions with their teachers before they send them?
They don't really go into that, the backstories of the various participants much. They reached just sort of presented unique individuals. They didn't really go in much. They, like, there's one that they talked about her Christianity and whether she was going to bring it up in her speech or not, or, you know, things like that. But yeah, it was definitely entertaining and well put together. But I enjoyed more the parts about getting to know the girls and their individual personalities.
So the human part.
Yeah.
As opposed to the machinations and the overarching issues that presented. Interesting.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I don't really need to see them go to summer camp. Like, I'm interested in the characters.
Yeah.
In the people.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. So where would you put this on? Like, is it worth a watch? Is this one people should try to seek out and see?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Now, you've got a busy schedule. What are some of the movies you're going to see here at Sundance?
Oh, gosh. So I am excited about Hitman, the new Richard Linklater film. That's probably my most anticipated because I love him, and I'm a big Glenn Powell fan. I'm excited about Rob Peace. I'm excited about the animated shorts. I was looking forward to it. There's an animated film, 10 Lives.
Oh, the cat movie.
Yeah, which I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Ghostlight, Outrun, Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to the Superman doc.
Yes.
You know, that'll be really good. And the Luther Vandross doc. Those are always, like, the docs are usually a highlight.
And that doc's a documentary.
Well, considering the fact that most of the documentaries that come out of here that win end up winning an Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 7 of the last 10 or 11 have been coming out of Sundance.
Wow. Yeah. So the trick then is picking which one you think before and getting your tickets.
Just getting here and then hopefully they'll recognize you.
Yeah.
Well, Rachel, thank you. We should also point out that Rachel watches all the Christmas movies.
I do.
All of
Every one of them.
Yes.
And that is one of her skills, talents, and one of the things that sets her apart. And it's even in the Utah Film Critics
Association. If you want to know Christmas movies.
She's watched them, and she's got thoughts on them.
Yep. That's right.
Rachelsreviews.net.
Yes, and Hallmarkies Podcast.
Hallmarkies Podcast.
We cover all the Hallmark, all the rom-coms, and we have a ton of fun.
Bless you.
Rachel, thanks for stopping by the movie show.
This was so fun.
We may have to have you on again sometime.
Please.
I'd love to get your perspective on some different things.
Anytime.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back on the movie show, we are going to actually talk with the director of one of the documentaries at Sundance called Lala, the story of Lollapalooza.
Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
The actor?
On KSL News Radio.
The movie show, our special Sundance Friday night. Yes, this is live. This is not a best of, although we may do it so well that it could go into a best of.
I doubt it.
Well, you never know. The best of the movie show. Oh, it's empty.
It's 5 minutes long.
We're having a good time. We're at Larry H. Miller Megaplex Gateway Theaters, the luxury theater that is so gorgeous since the remodel.
It's spoiled rotten going in there.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the most luxurious place you can see a Sundance movie and the only place that you can get concessions for a movie. But, Steve, we're excited right now because we're at Sundance. One of the things that we did get to actually watch, you and I both, was we got to see the first two episodes of the documentary, Lala, the story of Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
And we're really pleased to be joined by the director of this documentary, Michael John Warren. Michael, welcome to the movie show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, and I really hope that we make the best of show with this interview.
Well, hey,
there you go.
That is the right attitude
to start
with.
That will be the star.
We do appreciate that. And, hey, congratulations on getting your documentary into Sundance. Steve and I got to preview the first two episodes.
Yeah, are there more episodes coming? Well, how's that work?
Yes. So you saw the first two out of three, and eventually on Paramount Plus, this series will come out at a date soon to be announced, and that's where you'll see the third episode, which is a longer episode than the two that you guys have already seen.
Okay.
So for me, this was a trip right back to high school. I graduated from high school in 1994, so yes. Now, I will also qualify that by saying I was a little more into sports than I was into music. But my friends, sure. I swear I saw my friend in one of the crowd shots.
Yeah,
I didn't, but I could have sworn I did because they were into all of that. And so for people who don't know, this is the story of Lollapalooza. And for some of our younger listeners, they may not realize what a big deal it was. I think Lollapalooza, a documentary about Lollapalooza, is a perfect thing for Sundance 40th anniversary because there's some real similarities to how Sundance, where it started, where Lollapalooza started, and what they grew into.
Nice. I'm just amazed that you knew all these people. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Well, so, yeah, there's like a DIY spirit, do-it-yourself spirit, which really defined that era for us. You know, we sort of... So I was at the first Lollapalooza. I was 17 years old, and prior to that, I was like a little punk jazz kid, you know. And we felt, you know, my generation at that time felt a really specific way about what was going on in the world. And to be honest, we weren't super excited about some of the things we saw, all the social conservatism and you know, all the corporate greed and the police brutality, which would recently made headlines with the Rodney King video. You know, we thought we were the only kids who were upset about those things. And then, sorry, I realized we're live. And
thank you for cleaning that up.
You're welcome. The FCC is also welcome. You know, we felt this way. And then, of course, I see this lineup of impossibly cool bands all in one thing. And I went and, you know, it was a mind opening day for me. But I also saw all these kids who were stage diving and moshing. And, you know, we were stage diving and moshing, but at the VFW hall at like three punk shows in Mansfield, Massachusetts. And suddenly it's happening, you know, at this amphitheater in my hometown. And it's the day that I realized that the feelings that I had and my weird little art friends had were much bigger. And I, you know, in that one day, I saw thousands of kids who felt like we felt. And I realized that if there were thousands of kids who felt that way just here, that means there's millions of us. And then soon enough, you know, we claimed our well-earned moniker, Generation X. And, you know, a lot has happened since then. But I think that the film and the series is incredibly relevant right now because I feel like a lot of the things that we were pushing up against as kids are coming back. I mean, you guys saw those first two episodes. How many times when you were watching those first two episodes, you're like, wow, that was the problem back then? It feels like it's all happening today. And last night we had our big premiere in Park City. And after the premiere, a bunch of, you know, young kids came running up to me and they were so excited about the movie. And they're like, we felt like everything that show was talking about, what we're dealing with. And they haven't seen the third episode yet because what happens in the third episode is we take you all the way up to modern times and we really tie together sort of what's happening now and how it relates back to what was happening in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, and for me, again, because this goes right to the music that was coming on. I mean, I remember listening to Ice-T's Body Count album at my friend's house because that was not generally the type of music that played at my house. But at my friend's house, I heard a lot of these – a lot of these different things, and again, because Lollapalooza never came to Salt Lake.
Dang it.
I know, right? And I was never a big concert goer anyway, but of course, I mean, I watched MTV, so all the promo stuff for Lollapalooza, I saw all the stuff that was going on, and again, I had a friend who came home one night with a big old goose egg on his head from the mosh pit he was in. It looked like he had a third eye up on his forehead. So all of that stuff hit very close to home, and I didn't realize some of the bands that had played, and this is where I have fun watching documentaries about, you know, stuff I grew up through, was this wasn't information that we could get at the time. And, you know, I remember Kurt Loder on MTV. I remember seeing, like, all the a lot of those actual MTV news cut-ins that you had in the documentary. I actually remember seeing several of them when they aired the first time live.
Yeah, exactly.
But finding out all the stuff that there was just no way you would have known at the time and seeing it all put together, that's the kind of documentaries I enjoy.
You know what I loved about this movie was the idea that these kids are looking at each other like, you are weird, and I love it.
Exactly.
We are connected in a way that I had never considered, and the smile on their face. And these kids were really well-behaved. I was shocked. They have, you know, 30,000 kids, and nobody gets hurt? How did that happen? Amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it's important to remember that this, you know, the internet was just sort of starting right around then, so there wasn't really this, there wasn't a way to sort of just have something go viral and everyone knows what's happening. And Lollapalooza became this sort of organizing event where, like I said, the kids all sort of came together. And of course there were these activist booths or just different booths. And Perry Farrell, the, you know, the front man of Jane's Addiction and the founder of Lollapalooza, felt like that's part of what he wanted to do, was bring people together of like minds, but also of unlike minds. You know, he wanted, he says in the film, he wanted PETA next to the NRA in booths just to see what would happen. And that's what he really believes in, is he's not trying to, I mean, look, he is a provocateur, certainly, but he's really trying to bring people together. He believes that if people kind of understand each other better, that the world can be a better place. And, you know, knowing him and, you know, working with him, I've spent the entire day with Perry. He still feels that. Like, he talks about it all the time still to this day, 30 years later.
Well, when they do the Sly and the Family Stone song, I thought, okay, this is interesting.
That one was actually funny to watch in context from today because of what you could leave unbleeped and what you had to bleep. I thought that was really unique.
Yeah, well, the bleep was a choice, right?
Exactly.
But I think you made the right one.
No, I agree. I agree. But it was just, it's just funny in the context of 30 years later.
Yeah, and I think Flea, you know, Flea comes in right after that. He's like, couldn't do it today. Fair enough.
No, so, that's right.
But
Flea's grown up,
man.
That is hysterical.
Yeah, he has grown up. But, you know, we knew that that was going to be a hot button, could be a hot button issue. But I really wanted to make sure Ice-T came in and said his piece in there, because I think hearing Ice-T explain what was the intention behind that song and that performance is really important. And plus his answers for all those questions are just, you know, some of my favorite parts of those first two episodes as well.
Yeah.
Well, and the context, the context that you take, you know, if you've paid attention to pop culture over the last 30 years, if you're paying attention now, who would have thought that Ice-T and Body Count would then go on to go 20 seasons on a network television show where he plays a cop?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. I don't think the irony's lost on him either, by the way. Yeah, sorry, I keep stepping on you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. That's the nature of the connection. It's okay. I'd rather hear from you than me.
I don't think the irony of that is lost on Ice-T, is what I'm trying to say. He's well aware of how kind of funny it is that he's made a lot of waves with a song called Cop Killer, and now his acting career is completely centered around playing a cop.
I thought he explained that really well,
by the way. Yes, I agree. If I was to ask you, so when people actually watch this, whether they're able to catch the first two episodes here at Sundance, which I believe that they've put together for a feature-length watch. Like, we watched it as two episodes, but I believe when you watch it here, they're just put together back-to-back.
That's right. We do mark that this is the second part. So if you're going to see it in the theater, I'm actually about to walk into a screening here in Salt Lake in any minute now, and what they'll see is what you guys saw for the first episode. And then it'll just be a quick little card that says part two, and it goes right into the second episode. And then all the credits are at the end. So that's how you see it here during the festival.
Well, I think if you're a Gen Xer like me, and obviously you, and you paid attention to MTV or music in the 90s, this is one that you really ought to see. It's a fantastic trip back. And, I mean, I was transported back to where I feel like I could have put on my high school clothes again. And, you know, of course, my kids would laugh at me now, but it was a great trip back in time. And it was really interesting to learn about things that were going on around me that I couldn't have known then.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing it with us.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just want to reiterate, it's also relevant to the modern times. You guys just haven't seen that third part yet, and it's definitely resonating with the Gen Z kids as well. So it's not just for Gen Xers. It covers youth culture over the last 30 years. Just want to make sure we're going to see that third part?
He said it's soon, but I don't think he can say the release date just yet until Paramount announces it.
It'll be announced soon. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, so now if you had to pick, what is your favorite scene, interview, bite, or whatever from this documentary that you made?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. The Trent Nine Inch Nails story is, of course, that first show in Phoenix is an incredible part of this series.
When the tape deck went out.
Yeah, it's just like he delivers it so dry but so great.
He's so embarrassed.
I think Ice-T threatens to steal the show here, and I think Perry makes a lot of really, really great points. So it's impossible for me to say, but certainly the "Don't Call Me" performance with Ice-T and Perry in that that early Nine Inch Nails show, and then you know how they recover from that, are definitely some of the highlights for me.
Michael John Warren, director of Lala, The Story of Lollapalooza. You can see the first two parts of it at Sundance in a single screening, or it will be hitting Paramount Plus at some point, hopefully soon, and you'll get to see all three parts. So Steve and I can finally see the third part.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can't wait for you guys to see it.
Well, thank you, Michael, and good luck with the rest of Sundance, and head off to that screening.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye.
Okay. All right. Bye. All right, the movie show live at the Megaplex Theaters. We were hoping when he said a Salt Lake Theater that we would see him walk by in just a minute, but I do believe it's a different Salt Lake Theater. Larry, we've got some great stuff here. In fact, it looks like another wave of people is coming in. It looks like another round of a screening of a movie is about to start, and we've got all kinds of good energy here in the lobby.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like round two of the screenings are getting going. We a lot of people coming in and out, so a lot of positive energy tonight.
Well, we got the chance, and I'm going to hit this because I have already eaten some popcorn, which is
oh, really? No, I hadn't noticed.
Which is not approved for what I'm trying to
do get a
with my meal plan.
Save some for everybody else.
But it was so tasty, and getting a free popcorn. I just want to make sure everybody gets a chance at the Megaplex Theaters tonight. Through the end of tonight, through close of business, you can go into any Megaplex Theater and get a free
Free small popcorn. Free mega tub refill.
The best thing to do is grab your mega tub from home, run over to the local Megaplex, fill it up. I recommend you stay for a movie personally. But if not, just get the popcorn because it's delicious.
Hey, yeah, we know that people love us for our popcorn, and we're happy to give it out for free on National Popcorn Day and have a big celebration.
And we'll take it every single time. Now, we've been talking with you, Larry, about some of the cool things that you've got coming up at the Megaplex Theaters. We've talked about the 100 Years of Filmed in Utah series, 10 movies for $10 over 10 weeks.
Yep.
I mean, it's the return of the dollar movie.
Really,
there
yeah.
are no dollar movies.
Kind of rolling back the prices a bit for the 100-year anniversary. So
chance to see history of Utah. One of the things we were talking about with Virginia Pierce from the Utah Film Commission was, you know, these movies are a snapshot of Utah at that time, too. Now, yes, of course, things out in the West Desert pretty much look the same all the time. It just depends on what they build out or set. You know, it could be Johnny Depp's big ship or something like that. But other movies like downtown Salt Lake City.
They're great time capsules, right?
You know, The Sandlot.
Yep. I mean, so things to see how things have changed over the course of the 100 years from when they were filmed. And I do that all the time. I'll catch something in the background and I'm like, I recognize those mountains. And when was this filmed and what was around there? Or, you know, I recognize that street. And it's so much fun for people to do that. And this will give them that opportunity to kind of go back in time and see different sections of the state at different points in time.
I like, the idea of getting 10 built-in date days, or you know, just a chance to take your kids to see a movie on the big screen that you've only ever seen on the home theater screen. So here's one of the cool things: we're actually going to give away one of those four pack of those passes with Telephone Torture, which
All right.
We are still going to do. It's a good thing Blake's not listening right this second, or is he? Oh no,
Jeff doesn't care right now.
Well, I'm Blake.
Oh no, I know. Yeah.
Jeff doesn't worry, but you know, so. These are the things we're going to do. We also want to find out some more about the Valentine's Day events that you guys are going to have coming up because that's a big movie-going holiday, too.
Yep.
And I'm sure
big
you've got
night.
Something cool with that going on. And, of course, the Sundance Film Festival playing at the Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters at the Gateway. And we've got people coming by saying,
I knew it was you. Hey, get over here.
We've got a director who's stopping by the show right now.
That's him. That's.
Oh, wait, we were just talking.
Yeah.
We wondered if it was going to be here. Oh, my goodness.
No. Come right in.
Nice to see you.
If we'd have known you were going to come through, we would have just popped you on the headphones. But, hey. See, the magic of Sunday. This is what you do.
This is what we thought, right? He's on the phone going to a screening.
I saw his picture, and I thought, that's the dude.
No, that's but that's
this
that
is what
part
you get
Sundance.
At Sundance.
Yes, yeah. You might run into the director, you might run into one of the stars of the movie, and you get a chance to hobnob with them and tell them what you think of their work.
Yeah, I mean, and come and just hang out and be in the environment. You don't have to have a ticket going in. Obviously, that's a great thing to do too. But you never know who you're going to bump into coming in and out of these things.
And remember, if you come see one at the Megaplex theaters, it might be the only one, as far as we know, where you can actually have concessions at one of the Sundance movies.
Yep, full concessions and food available at all of our shows, just like a regular movie. So you get the heated seats, you get the recliners, you get the full laser projection, Atmos sound, and full food available to you. So
perfect.
Best way to do Sundance, best way to see a movie in Utah, Megaplex Theaters.
Nine. The KSL Movie Show, Top 10.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right. It's the 40th edition of the Sundance Film Festival. Now, Steve, we have two potential things for the movie show Top 10. So I'm going to let you pick which one we do.
I would say
we've got either now the Sundance Institute surveyed the filmmaking community and asked for the top 10 films ever to come out of Sundance, or we can do the 10 highest grossing Sundance movies ever. Which would you prefer?
I think I prefer the favorites.
Okay, and you've probably seen more of these than I have, but here are some.
I've probably seen all of them.
You're going to be surprised, maybe some of you listeners, if you haven't followed Sundance over the years, that these were movies that came out of Sundance.
True.
Now, again, this is selected by the Sundance Institute survey of filmmaking community. The number 10.
How long ago was this taken?
This year. It's for the 40th anniversary. It actually just got published a couple of days ago.
Oh, perfect.
So we've got number 10, and you've talked about this. Blood Simple, Joel and Ethan Coen, 1985.
Yep, I sat there in Sundance in one of those rickety little chairs and watched this movie. And the opening scene is through a windshield, and the windshield wipers are going, you know, back and forth, but they're like delayed. And the credits, the opening credits of the movie, when the windshield wipers would go, they'd go away. And I'm like, oh, that is a cool idea. If the rest of this movie is that good, I'm in.
And was it?
Oh, yeah.
I never even heard of it.
Blood Simple? Yeah, it's a...
I mean, of course I've seen it as a movie critic. I've seen every movie ever.
Yeah, put it on your list.
All right, number 9, Y Tu Mama Tambien, 2002, Alfonso Cuarón.
Yes, good
movie. Gustavo, have you seen that one? Sorry, spicy. I caught him with a mouth full of popcorn.
It's a spicy movie.
Y Tu Mama Tambien, Alfonso Cuarón, who then went on to direct other things. He didn't do one of the Harry Potter movies, did he? Oh, he did Gravity.
Oh, that's right. He did Gravity.
Okay. Number 8, Boyhood, Richard Linklater.
Oh, love.
2014. In fact, when we asked the text question of that, I think you're muted, Larry. Let me see if I can unmute. I don't know.
Can you unmute him?
That's actually some of the votes for your favorite Sundance movie that people have seen. One person was like, hey, Boyhood was the best movie I saw in the whole year of 2014.
It was a long movie.
Yeah. Number 7, we've got Before Sunrise, Richard Linklater, 1995.
Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy.
Wasn't there like...
It was a trilogy.
There was like one at noon and one at midnight or something like that.
Something like that.
This one Before Sunset or After Sunset, something like that.
Number 6, from director Steven Soderbergh, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, 1989. According to Variety magazine, that's the movie that really shot Sundance into the stratosphere of popularity.
That's true, and it starred what's her face,
Andie MacDowell.
Yes, why?
Because you can never remember her name, and I remember it because she and I have the same name, sort of.
Well, I remember her. I should, because I interviewed her live in advance of 4 weddings and a funeral, and they said, "Do you want to talk to the other guy that's in the movie?" I'm like, I don't know who he is. It was Hugh Grant, and he's standing there on the side. And after I saw the movie, I'm like, oh, dude, he had all the personality. She was adorable. We talked about goat cheese, and it was fun. But Hugh Grant was standing off to the side, and I never
knew. You are the luckiest person ever. He's one of my favorites, and now he's in Oompa Loompa.
Yes.
Larry Tassoni from Megaplex Theaters. Let's see. Soderbergh actually has a movie premiering at Sundance this year.
Yes, Presence.
And it's apparently told from the point of view of the haunter in a haunting house rather than the people getting haunted.
Oh.
Ooh.
So that he's going to flip it around a little bit. Number five, and this is another, this filmmaker received an honorary award last night. Christopher Nolan's first ever movie, Memento, back in 2001. Did you know that Christopher Nolan came out of Sundance?
Yes, I did.
You knew that, but I'm kind of speaking.
Did you know why? Because no studio would touch that film. He shopped it to everybody, and then like a year later, his manager goes, "Why don't we try to get it into Sundance?" And that's where it went crazy.
And that's where we got Oppenheimer 20 years later,
yep.
22 years later. That was number five on the top 10 list of the Sundance Institute top 10 films selected by the filmmaking community. Number four, which I should see because everybody talks about it, Little Miss Sunshine, 2006.
Oh,
Jonathan Dayton, Valerie Faris directing.
Paul Dano's in it. Everybody's in it.
Alan Arkin.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Steve Carell.
Greg Kinnear.
What's her name from Australia?
One of the Fannings.
Oh, yeah. And I can't think of her
name.
Is
it one of the Fanning girls in it? Or am
no.
I thinking of something else?
I don't think so.
I can't remember.
Okay.
No, the girl was, shoot.
The mom, it's going to drive me crazy now until I look it up.
Yeah, she was in The Wedding. Come on. Everybody's screaming.
Where's our Stone on this one, man? He doesn't got his computer. He doesn't know. He can't even hear us.
She was in Hereditary. She was the lead in Hereditary.
Toni Collette?
Toni Collette, yes.
There you go.
And the little girl was...
Abigail Breslin.
Yes.
Oh, Breslin. Okay, see, right. I was thinking Fanning and Breslin. I always get the groups mixed up.
And it's very funny and cute and sweet.
Number three is Get Out, Jordan Peele, 2017.
Ooh, wow.
Wow.
I didn't know that one came out of Sunday.
I didn't either, no.
That was a haunting film. Haunting film.
Number two, Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino, 1992. In fact, Variety says if it wasn't for Soderbergh, you maybe don't have Tarantino later.
Well, I recall when that came out here at Sundance, people were walking out because it was too violent.
From what I've heard, I believe that.
Yeah, it was just yikes. They walked out and...
Also got the story about Four Weddings and a Funeral where half the state legislature's there.
Oh, that's true.
And the first four words of the movie start with the letter F.
Yeah, they were not happy with
that.
They
didn't stick around
for
that.
They got up en masse and left. The whole center of that theater was empty.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
That's one where then the director's sitting there, he's like, and the organizers are like, whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah. And number one, 2014, Whiplash.
Oh, what a movie.
Damien Chazelle, J.K. Simmons, and who was the drummer?
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller.
God, Great film. That was a short, by the way, originally. And then a couple years later, he blew it out into a full-length movie. And wow, what a movie.
That is the Movie Show Top 10. Top 10 films all time selected by the filmmaking community as surveyed by the Sundance Institute.
It's a good list.
That's a list I should add most of those to my list. I actually don't think I've seen any of them.
That's impressive. You'd think you'd stumble up onto one of them.
Would think so, but yeah.
I wouldn't start with Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, yeah. No, I was actually... I always get Reservoir Dogs mixed up with Scorsese's mob one from the
Goodfellas?
Early 90s. Goodfellas, yeah.
In fact,
Goodfellas, I believe, was the inspiration for Reservoir Dogs. If I read something by Tarantino, I could be wrong on that. I don't know. We've been taking your text questions. If you've been to a Sundance movie, which ones? And which ones did you like? Here was Boyhood 2014, best film of the year. Never been to a Sundance film, but I liked Sliding Doors, which came out of
That was the Sundance. Opening night movie. That was the where I gave up my seat to Kate Capshaw.
Ooh.
What?
Yeah. It was packed theater, Abravanel Hall. I'd already seen it because we were reviewing stuff. And so she was walking looking for a seat, and I was on the end. I go, ma'am, would you like to sit here? And she said, oh, that's very kind of you. I go, well, tell Steven.
And was Steven anywhere nearby?
No, he wasn't anywhere.
Did she scream like Willie Scott in Indiana Jones?
I didn't stick around.
Oh.
That would have been creepy.
You should have been behind her and been like, boo, and then she would have screamed like Willie, and you're like, yes.
That wasn't that
kind of... I'm very mature.
That kind of movie, I'm afraid.
Let's see. We've got one more that suggested... Oh, here's one that says, no, I've never been to a Sundance movie. I completely understand you, Texter. I am the same. I never been to Sundance at Sundance, but we love the movie Once, which was a Sundance movie.
What a movie. That soundtrack is just... I actually wept in that film. That was a beautiful movie.
So keep the text coming, 57500. If you've been to a Sundance movie at Sundance, tell us which one. Or if there's a movie that came out of Sundance that you absolutely love, tell us that.
You know, Coda wasn't mentioned, and that won the Academy Award for Best Picture. That came out of Sundance.
That's a good point. And as I said earlier, three of my favorite movies from last year turned out they came out of Sundance. My favorite movie of the year, which was Radical, the Eugenio Derbez movie. Scrapper came out of Sundance.
Loved.
And, oh, now what was
Past
the other
Lives.
One? Past Lives came out of Sundance, and that was one of my favorite movies. So, good stuff.
Yeah.
The hope is that you can get a chance to get a ticket to it or pick it out from all the big lineup to find out which one it's going to be.
That's always the tough thing, trying to figure out what is actually good until you start reading some stuff. The thing about nowadays, there are reviews out for probably a dozen of these films that I looked at today that they watched yesterday.
Yeah, and so that's another reason they didn't let us see them is they weren't going to let us watch them on streaming before they were going to premiere them to everybody else. So I kind of understand why we weren't able to see more movies before our show tonight.
Well, what they do, though, the critics that, you know, are regular Sundancers, they usually get, like Renshaw, I'm sure he's seen a bunch of stuff.
Okay. Well, we'll do better then so we can see more movies.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah. So those are the kinds of things going on at Sundance, the 40th anniversary 2024. If we have time, we'll do another top 10 of the top 10 moneymakers out of Sundance of all time when we return on the movie show. And when we get back on the movie show, we're actually going to talk with the director of one of the unique entries in 2024's Sundance, which is called Eno, which uses AI to make a different movie each time you watch it.
Yeah, that's weird.
But before we get to that part, that's actually one of the movies, Larry H. Sony, Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters, that's playing here at the Gateway.
Yeah, that's one of the screenings happening tonight.
I can't wait to find out how that actually works.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Because how does that actually work? Does every projector have like a USB drive that has something? I don't. This is the things that I'm curious
that's
to find out
question.
Tonight. How exactly does that work? But, wow, the fact that you can come to a Megaplex theater to see Sundance, you know, I do the traffic. The drive through the canyon is always an iffy proposition in January. In fact, the weather was so bad earlier this week that we had Variety magazine had an article about how bad the weather was driving up Route 80 to Park City.
Route 80.
And then if you're coming into Sundance, beware, you're going to have to deal with that. But guess what? You don't even have to do that. You come straight from the airport, you grab the train, and it will drop you off literally in front of this theater.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. Super convenient to see your Sundance movie here at the Gateway and probably the most luxurious seating you'll have.
Now, we probably should point out to get the tickets, this is not what, for those of you who are newbies to Sundance like myself, you can't walk in and buy a ticket to Sundance at the box office like you would be for any other movie.
Correct, yeah. Sundance.org. You want to click on the festival section. That'll take you to the schedule and the tickets to see your venue and pick it up there or purchase it there, and then, you know, you'll check in when you arrive.
Yeah. So
you're thinking that box office is just fake or what?
Well, no, you got to come in with your thing and can you go buy at the box office when you walk up? I didn't think you could. I thought you'd do it online, but maybe you can. There is a temporary box office set up.
We're going to find
out. None
of
the kiosks.
Because I'm thinking if there was an extra ticket or two, then maybe you could buy it here.
We should. Yeah, that's a good point. Well,
we'll find out.
We promise to get that figured out. But when you come to the Megaplex theaters to watch a Sundance movie, and you've got some long concession lines right now, people are figuring out.
Yeah, we've been whispering some things about the National Popcorn Day so that people can take advantage of the free popcorn at any of the Megaplex theaters. But even with Sundance going on, if you don't have a ticket, you can still come in and take advantage of that here at the Gateway.
I don't think that guy believed you, by the way.
No, they didn't even go and get the free popcorn, which just...
I think, yeah, he thought we were trying to punk him.
I feel very disappointed. So these are the type of things that you can do. See a movie that you may never see anywhere else. Who knows?
Take a chance.
It's an interesting thing, and it looks like we've got our director showing up here that we'll talk to in just a minute about Eno. But, Larry, we want to also highlight the other great things that Megaplex Theaters are doing. You guys usually have some kind of Valentine's special. Have you announced what that is yet publicly?
It's still being finalized.
Okay.
So the details will be coming soon. You want to keep an eye on our website and our socials for all that kind of thing. But you know, we usually have a great selection of films, sometimes some classics and current releases, and catered dinners in our luxury suites that are private.
Oh.
We were throwing around some ideas about
also
doing...
Do you have blindfolded violinists?
Not yet.
But we also were looking at catering to other groups outside of the Valentines, like the Galentine's crowd or those that want to have a girls' night out. And so, keep an eye out and see which ones make the cut. And if you have suggestions for us, make sure you send them in through our channels so that we can cater to what your needs are this Valentine's Day.
Yep. And then you've got the Films in Utah series, 10 movies, $10 over 10 weeks. The Dollar Movie is back, and it is at Megaplex Theaters.
Yeah, 10 classic
But only
films.
Those movies.
Right, yeah. Just those films, but they're great films. You know, the Megaplex and the Utah Film Commission worked hand-in-hand to select some of the best films ever made here in Utah, and so that's what we're bringing to you.
Cool. All right. Larry H. Miller, Megaplex Theaters, best place to see a movie in Utah.
No question.
In the movie show's humble opinion.
It's the KSL Movie Show.
It gave the audience feelings they weren't sure they should enjoy.
The week's big movie review, movie news, games, and prizes. Here's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales.
I got a slice of butter melting on top of a big old pile of flapjacks.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Steve Sales and Andy Farnsworth, we're live at the Gateway Megaplex as part of Sundance 2024, the 40th anniversary. And we're pleased to be joined now by the director and, let me see if I got to get this exactly right, the head of programming, which has got to be a first when you're talking about a movie that you're going to watch.
Maybe.
The director, Gary Hustwit, and Brendan Dawes, the head of programming. This is for the movie called Eno.
Should be called Fluid.
Why? Because it's changing every time.
Well, that's what we want to talk about. So one of the more I would say this has to be the most unique film maybe ever at Sundance because of what it does. So Gary, tell us about Eno and why you have a director, a head of programming for your movie.
Sure. Well, it's about the musician and artist Brian Eno, who's sort of legendary in the music world. He... You know, produced David Bowie. He co-wrote the song Heroes. He worked with Talking Heads. He's worked with U2, and basically invented the genre of ambient music in the 70s. Had this amazing career, but he's always been at the forefront of bringing technology into art and kind of pushing the boundaries and experimenting with things. So it made sense. He uses a lot of generative technology in his music making. So it made sense for us to do something a little different with the approach to this film. I wanted to make a documentary about him. There wasn't a feature documentary about him. He hates documentaries about artists and musicians.
So you had to come up with a different angle.
Well, I was kind of coming up with a different angle anyway, because I've been making films now for like 16, 17 years. But my background was in music before that. And something about just showing the same film over and over again that's the exact same length anytime I go. I mean, I can't even watch my films anymore. I've seen them too many times. Like when we go out on screening tours, sure. It's kind of like a visual torture to watch the same thing over and over and over again. But I was kind of dreaming of a way 5 years ago that I could be excited by the film. I would go into a theater and, you know, I'd say, yeah, you know, push play and I didn't know it was going to happen. It'd be exciting, and I could include the audience in that. Like, hey, this might be horrible. It might be great, but it's only going to exist right here with this group. No one else is going to see this version. So that's when I emailed my friend Brendan, who is a digital artist in England, and we started working on it.
We did, because I met Gary in 2009. And we've stayed friends ever since, and we always wanted to work on a project together. And, you know, you get those emails from, you know, Gary would send me these things, and then this particular email was like, I've got this idea for a film that is never the same twice, you know, and you just say yes, you know. It's how do you not? I mean, I had no idea how we were going to make it, but I think that's always the exciting thing. So that was 2019, you know, from that one email. Now we're here at Sundance, and it's really exciting to see the people's reaction to it as well, you know. Really fantastic.
So what's a basic explanation? How does generative AI fit into the film? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. Well, basically, if you can imagine it, it's kind of like an intelligent assembler of a lot of scenes that we've made, of raw footage, because Brian Eno had hundreds of hours of archival footage that we digitized and restored. There's music. There's, you know, he's got 50 years of material, lectures, interviews, talks, live performances. So way more footage than you could ever fit into a movie or even a series. So using a generative system that Brendan programmed, basically it chooses the scenes from this massive pool of footage and music, arranges them in an interesting way, and also does its own, builds its own transitions and other things, but it's working with all of our footage. It's not trained on anyone else's work or anything like that. We've sort of trained it with our knowledge as filmmakers to do the things that kind of make a documentary, you know, a plot and interesting. So every time that we generate a new cut, it's pulling in different footage in a different order and making its own original transitions. And then we have a movie. And that is the only time that movie will ever be seen. Because the odds of it repeating itself, Brendan, what are the numbers?
Yeah, so we did the numbers on and the maths. So it's possible to make 52 quintillion versions. So that's 52 with 19 zeros after it, which is more than the number
like
of particles. Yeah, you know, I've not watched them all yet, but
you'd have to watch for 200 years nonstop for it to get a version that would repeat.
So you're going to be like enjoying this right along with the regular crowd?
Yeah. Which is the great thing about it. It makes watching a movie more of an event, because you know that it's like if you go see a concert, even if the band's got a hit song and they've got to play it every single night, it's different every single night. Yes. They extend the solo section. They bring on a guest artist on stage. You can mix it up. A film doesn't have that fluidity. It's just this rigid structure that we've been dealing with for 130 years.
Wow.
But it's a technical constraint that doesn't apply anymore. So why aren't we innovating more with the ways you can tell a story? In our case, it's all about one person. So anything we show, it's going to connect because it's all about Brian.
Yeah.
If it's from the 70s, from yesterday, whatever, the audience makes the connections between the scenes and the ideas in the film.
Does the AI narrate?
No, there's no narration.
No, that's why I wondered.
Yeah, no. It just happened. Just like, you know, a mix of scenes, live performance, a creative thing, something from Brian's past, Brian in the studio with U2 in the 80s producing a record. It just, you know, all these different things, and we've had amazing documentary editors edit the scenes in a way that they can appear in lots of different places in different orders. So, it's a
priority,
combination.
Are there priority scenes?
There definitely are. There are key scenes that we for the Sundance generation, we said, okay, we want these seven scenes to always happen. Okay. The movie has a similar opening scene and a similar ending scene every time. And in the middle, everything, the 90 minutes that can just be all kinds of stuff.
You could watch
a dozen versions and you still wouldn't see everything. We showed a version yesterday, in Park City. And then showed another version this afternoon in Park City, and you know 60% of the film was completely different. Somehow it all works because again it's about one person, so you can kind of make the connections and build the story yourself.
How is this going to work if it gets picked up for mass distribution? I mean, do you got to have like a flash drive in the projector? Do you? It generates the version, but like, how does that work? Like, how do you play it?
Well, there's. The beauty of it is there's actually lots of different ways that it can work. You know, it can be live. It can render a file out, you know, in a traditional way. So it's the flexibility that we love. So, you know, we're talking to various people right now of how we can broadcast it, you know. But I think we always like the idea of that it only exists in that moment, you know, which is kind of appealing for us.
Yeah, because every day it could be different. Yeah. that could be a new movie. You know, the ultimate, the highest use of it would be that every person who streams the film gets their own unique version that no one else in the world gets.
I kind of want to do that with every movie now. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. But it's funny because it's possible. I mean, if you get an amazing filmmaker and they think of an idea that could fit in this sort of, you know, structure that's different every time, a fiction story, it doesn't have to be a documentary. And then Brendan and I just did another thing in Venice, at the Venice Biennale, where we did a kind of a prequel to the Eno movie that was 168 hours long. It wasn't a loop. It was a movie that was made that was 168 hours long that never repeated itself.
Oh, boy.
It went on 24 hours a day for a week.
Wow.
It never stops. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the point is there are other ways to tell stories, and we have the technology to do it, and yet I think the streamers, most of them are, it's just about pushing out the same, another true crime series or whatever it is.
Well, I was going to say, your next assignment is to remake the movie Clue using the generative AI so that you get a game of Clue every time you watch it.
We could do it. We could do it. But it's trying to experiment with different ways to tell stories now that we have technology to mix it up a little bit. I feel like the streaming networks have been very good at, like, getting the data from the subscribers and suggesting things that you might like and really making more of that stuff. But there needs to be something else. It's not just about more content, more films, more series. I can't even watch all the series that are on these streaming channels.
No.
And there's been so little experimentation with the actual form of the movies. So this is just it's an idea. We're here showing it, and
you're the pioneers.
It's the opening of a conversation. Like, okay, is this an interesting thing? Is this an interesting structure? Are there other ways to kind of use this technology to do cool things? That's we're going to show it tonight. This version will never be seen again anywhere. The version we show tonight and tomorrow, et cetera.
We understand there's one ticket remaining. For anyone who's listening who wants to come see it, there's still a shot to come see it here at the Gateway. Well, Gary Huswit and Brendan Dawes, thank you for joining us here on the movie show.
Pleasure.
Congratulations
so cool.
on getting it into
cool.
Sunday.
I love it.
Thank you.
SL Movie Show. Telephone torture.
Yes, it is a live episode of the movie show on a Friday night, the night people go to see movies. We're live at the Gateway Megaplex Theaters. We're joined by Larry Tassoni from Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters, in part, Larry, because you guys sponsor this segment and give away great prizes, and we have two great prizes to give away in this segment of Telephone Torture. But first, if you want to participate, 801-575-8255, 801-KSL-TALK. If you want to get on this.
So if this is your first experience, and we are on at night, so this is unusual.
Yes.
We're going to ask you a question, and then you have to guess what that movie is.
Yes. We have a movie, and the theme is a Sundance movie. And the extra clue, that bonus clue, is it was Steve's mom's favorite movie that came out of Sundance.
That's right.
Ever. And all the questions, we have three, will be about the same movie. So it's not three different movies. We have at least one or two questions.
I can make up a third.
If you want to, that's what you call, 801-575-TALK. I'm tired. It's been a long day. I feel like my brain's starting to run out of energy. I usually explain this a lot faster and a lot more directly. It's probably the popcorn that's dulling my senses.
Oh, sure it is.
Probably.
Don't blame the popcorn.
Don't blame the popcorn. It was delicious. I won't lie. Steve will give out the clues, and if you get it right, you win one of two awesome Megaplex prize packages, which I don't think Gustavo put. You didn't put it on our list, so I'll look it up. I'll look it up while Steve asks our first question. Do we have somebody on
Sundance
the line?
One of the Sundance, right?
What of the what?
It's a Sundance prize.
It is. There's a Sundance prize.
Yeah, we have tickets to give away to a Sundance screening that is a yet-to-be-named film title. I can tell you that the title is family friendly for anybody, so whoever wins, you can feel free or feel safe there's family friendly films at Sundance.
All right, so this is the prize: two tickets to the special Sundance screening at the Gateway, a Megaplex popcorn, and two Megaplex drinks. So it's basically the date night, only you're going to see a Sundance.
You get some
movie.
Sundance flair.
Yeah.
And the other prize is the Megaplex Filmed in Utah series, four passes to the Megaplex, 10 movies, 10 weeks, $10 for those who don't win Telephone Torture, but it'd be free to somebody who does. So we've got our first person on the line. Who's this?
This is Brent.
Brent, are you ready? No. Do you know your ready. Sundance history?
A little bit. I've been a couple of years to some random films, but haven't been, for several years. So
I will say this. This is a movie that did get wide release. This is not one of the ones that only ever played at Sundance. Yeah, no. So it should help. All right, Steve, what is question number one?
Okay. The lead actress lied to get an audition for this Louisiana Bayou movie. The casting director was looking for a young girl, 6 to 9 years old. Quavanjane was only 5 at the time, and she beat out 4,000 other little girls for the part.
I have
so
no idea.
Quavanjane should give it away right now. I'm kidding. I was being very sarcastic. I do know who he's talking about, but I wouldn't have guessed the movie just by that actress's name.
That's a pretty solid trivia question, guys. Any more clues?
All right. I'll give you a hint. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words in the title.
That helps. I don't know the answer. That's not the title.
I don't know the answer. That's for darn
I'll
sure.
I'll give you another hint. One of the words in the title is the.
This is torture.
This is definitely torture.
Well, it's got to live up to its name.
Actually, I'm not kidding.
All right. If you had to make a guess, what would you guess? The Star Wars. That was the Sundance version of Star Wars before George Lucas released it. All right, well, that's okay. We appreciate you playing. And that is incorrect. Yay. I do not
just
know.
Just Donkey Kong him or whatever.
Mario.
Oh, sorry.
Mario.
All right, well, good luck. All right, who is our next potential torture? You're going to be tortured, it sounds like, no matter what.
Well, I'm trying here. This next part should be easy.
And just remember, this was Steve's mom's favorite, so no backlash on it.
Says Andy after,
says I, after I stepped in my own mouth.
Okay.
All right, wait. Who's our next contestant?
This is Rick.
Rick?
Yes.
Rick, we're so pleased that at 8:45 on a Friday night, we've got somebody who wants to win at Telephone Torture. Boy. All right, are you a Sundance fan?
A little bit.
Okay, I gave you a lot more clues than Steve did.
No kidding. Okay, the second clue is this film won the Grand Jury Prize in the dramatic category at Sundance in 2012 and later had 4 Oscar nominations at the 2013 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Actress, the youngest ever nominee for the part of the character Hush Puppy.
Okay, so he basically just told you, basically,
if you have any finger dexterity,
you should be able to find the answer to that. We'll give you an extra 5 seconds over normal.
You know, I was really thinking about it being one movie, but that just threw it out the window.
Shoot.
So what was your guess?
I was actually going to say that's not anywhere near it.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I am.
I'll give you 2 words in the title. Of the.
What's wrong with you? That's just mean.
I'm trying to help people out
is
here, Steve.
In,
you're
in
torturing
to
them. I'm trying to help them.
Well, I thought
so
I, if I gave
the
them
five.
The
No,
year.
That includes the original the. So
the year, the actual actress.
Yeah, but nobody's going to know how to spell that actress's name.
That's why that works so well.
Yeah, that really does work well.
It's a combination of her mother's name and her father's name.
I haven't got a clue.
Okay. Nice guess. We're sorry that we had to torture you like that.
Is there anybody online that's gotten it?
And remember, you can text 57500 if you think you know the answer. Oh. Blank of the blank blank.
It practically just.
Do we have anyone else on the phone? We don't have anyone else.
Okay, it was set.
Steve, you scared them all off.
Oh, my gosh.
We have 2 prizes to give away, and nobody's going to win any.
It's called the bathtub. It's part of the Louisiana area, and it happened they were filming it at the same time that that big BP oil explosion thing.
Okay, we've got somebody who's probably Googled all the clues we gave out and is ready to take a shot. All right, who do we got? First of all, Larry, do you think you know what it is?
I have no idea.
He has no idea, and Larry is the film buyer for Megaplex Theaters.
What the heck is going on here?
Jeez, Steve.
Dude, I love this movie. I thought everyone loved this movie. My mom. My mom loved this movie because she says, this is how you teach kids the right way to live.
When we find out the title of this film, if it's something obvious that everybody knows, I'm blaming the clues.
Wow.
And otherwise, we just blame Steve for picking an obscure movie. All right. Who is our final phone contestant? Who's this?
If it's Don, I'm going to lose it.
Chris.
I can hear Chris. Okay, I was going to say, I can hear your car in the background, Chris. All right, Chris. We've done just about everything except actually tell you the title of the movie so that you can repeat it back to us. Do you think you know
Beast
the answer
of the Southern Wild.
Thank you. Oh. Sorry.
Hey, no swearing.
I didn't say it. I said thank you.
Chris, congratulations.
Oh, you
I got to ask you the question. Did you Google it?
Oh, of course you did.
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry. I made that so hard.
Oh, and someone on the text line texted in the correct answer, Steve.
We'll give him the other prize.
We might have to get
that's right, because we have two prizes, and we didn't want to have anybody.
So he can choose which one he wants?
Yeah, so you get to choose. Chris, you win. There's two choices. You can have the Megaplex Sundance prize package of two tickets to a special Sundance screening here at the Gateway, a Megaplex popcorn and two Megaplex drinks, or you get four passes to the Megaplex Filmed in Utah series, 10 movies over 10 weeks. That's 40 movies.
But we don't know what they are yet, right? Or we know,
we know of most of them.
No, yeah, we know what the 10 films are, and they're actually on our Coming Soon page on our website. You can see them there, and they'll be on the pass as well. So.
But they're going to be great films from Utah. Come on.
All right,
we'll
Chris.
Go with the last.
You want the Filmed in Utah series. Great choice. Excellent choice. Congratulations. And thank you for playing Telephone Torture at this late hour of the night.
No problem, guys.
All right, stay
more
on the line.
It's torture for me than it was for them, I thought, for sure.
Well, we never say who the torture's for. We never really specify that. But, all right, congratulations, Chris. Stay on the line so that Alex can get your information, and we'll get you that.
And by the way, if you haven't seen Beasts of the Southern Wild, watch it.
It's on my list.
Oh, stop.
I'll have to put it on my list as well.
Great
movie.
Larry, this has been a blast doing Sundance up here. We've actually had a couple of coworkers go by. Our big boss is here to see Eno. We just talked with the director a couple minutes ago. Our afternoon producer, Jess, she loves Sundance. She's got to take us to like five different movies this weekend. She just came by for her first one. Yeah. Come by the Gateway and come see a Sundance movie. In the most comfortable seat, you'll see any Sundance movie at Sundance.
I'm telling you, the one tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., the Norwegian film, the documentary, the Urban? What is it called? Hold on.
Urban Dictionary?
No. It was his Ebelin. That's his character's name in the World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. You did talk about that one earlier.
It's
okay.
10 o'clock tomorrow morning here.
It's not too late to get a free popcorn at the Megaplex Theaters. You probably got a couple of more hours.
Yeah, we're still open. Still got lots of movies playing at all of our other locations. And come into the Gateway, get your popcorn as well.
Now, think about this. You're out right now and you're driving around because you've got a night driving job delivery, whatever.
ISS tonight.
You could. I liked ISS. We talked about that on the movie show earlier today.
Yeah, or Freud's.
Or Freud's. Oh, Freud's last session was awesome. Yeah. We talked about that on earlier movie show today. So there's lots to do. But if you're just driving around and you weren't even going to go see a movie, stop into the Megaplex. Get a free popcorn tonight.
Free popcorn.
Eat the popcorn while you're driving.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
That's free.
You have to say it nice, though.
Yeah. All right. So the great things coming up at Megaplex Theaters. First of all, you guys still have your Megatubs tags, the 2024 tags. You can still get those for 2024, which means if you have a Megatub from a previous year, you just attach the tag onto it. And you get to refill your Megatubs.
Yeah, just don't forget that they're limited quantities every year.
Oh, and even on the tags?
We go through, the tags every year. There's a limited
supply. Was only buckets.
They get hit really hard right before Christmas. They're great Christmas gifts. And so they're winding down as to what we have left in the inventory. So if you haven't got your tag for 2024, make sure you do it quick.
Look at you going scarcity. That's nice.
And remember, at Megaplex Theaters, they have a special blend. If you have a Mega Mug for the soft drinks, you've got the Megaplex flavor that my kids get every time.
The Mega Twist in our freestyle machines is a specially designed flavor just for Megaplex theaters.
I discovered these freestyle machines at Megaplex a few years back. I didn't even know they existed. I came to a Megaplex. I was like, what is this? They explained it to me, and I was like, what? This exists?
Freedom is what it is.
Right. Yeah,
and I mean, now I can't get one from one of the ones where you just like have six selections and you
just
push
the tower.
The little,
yeah.
Yeah. I can't do that. I can't. So Megaplex theaters.
Really the state of the art of everything.
It really is. Digital. You guys have added new digital screens up in Ogden.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ogden remodel finished up right before Thanksgiving last year, so now they are 100% luxury seats. Heated.
And you got Platinum X.
And a Platinum X screen that also has D-Box seats in that auditorium. Oh. And the great new concept that exists up in Ogden at the Junction are our luxury boxes that have two seats with kind of a little bit of a privacy wall so that you don't have to necessarily hear your neighbor right next to you discussing the film or passing their food around or anything like that. And so it's subtle. You know, it's not doesn't completely seclude you from the rest of the auditorium, but it gives you just enough privacy to feel like you're having a private screening in an auditorium. And those are great. That's a great experience as well.
Cool.
Well, we appreciate you having us out here on the movie show tonight. It's been a blast getting to talk to people from Sundance, just getting the vibe that comes when people come get to see movies that the first time anybody gets to see them anywhere. And it's great that the Megaplex Theaters is got a chance to screen those again. And thank you for being a sponsor of Telephone Torture and the awesome prizes.
Yeah, well, we love partnering with you guys. It's fun to be in this atmosphere with all the energy and excitement. I had one of those moments, too. One of my old college professors was here earlier that I hadn't seen in years, and he was one of my favorite teachers from down at UVU.
Please tell me he remembered you.
He did, you know, and he actually remembered the dissertation that I wrote and what the topic of it was and everything, and I didn't expect anything like that.
Why
and
Empire Strikes Back is the best of the Star Wars trilogy? Because that's the one I'd submit. No. But Larry Tassone, thank you so much for being with us on
really
the show
appreciate
tonight.
You coming out tonight.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll take a break here on the movie show. When we get back, Steve, you and I will do rapid fire of what are the movies at Sundance 2024 that we want to see most.
Oh, okay.
All right, the special movie show, our final segment here, Steve. We want to wrap up the movie show from Sundance with what a rapid fire, Steve, of what are the Sundance movies for 2024 that we most would like to see. I'll go first. I'm actually excited about Thelma. I love the idea of June Squibb, which, again, if you haven't, you'll recognize her when you see her, like
old.
You've seen her.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea that she goes on any kind of vengeance thing, just I'm already laughing at it, and I hope that it's,
well,
that it's
scammed,
what I imagine.
Right? A phone
right. So she doesn't need the beekeeper. She is the beekeeper.
Ooh. Whoa.
How about you?
Okay. I keep mentioning this Ibelin movie that's the story of Matt Steen. He died of muscular disease at 25. His parents thought he was a sad loner, had no idea he was an actual legend in a popular video game, World of Warcraft, and people, after his passing, were flooding his parents.
This is going to be like a scrapper one for me that I'm going to see later in the year and be like, oh my gosh, that was so good.
And his character is Ibelin, and they actually reenact some of the things that he did in the game so that you can see what he accomplished and how many people actually love this kid. It's really...
All right, you're selling me on this pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, one for me is the documentary Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. Mm. Absolutely going to have to see that one. Purported to be the definitive portrait of Christopher Reeve's life.
One I won't be seeing is Skywalker's A Love Story. A couple, they climb buildings, free climb.
Oh, you got me excited for a second thinking...
It's the free
is
solo.
This like... Is this like the story of Anakin and Padme, or
he said both Skywalker and Solo in that?
I know, right?
Keep getting any more excited.
And then there's one, a doc called The Greatest Night in Pop, a documentary about the making of We Are the World. It's got four Sundance screenings, and then it hits Netflix on January 29th.
Handling the Undead. I've got to see that. The guy that wrote Let the Right One In. Oh. Ooh.